Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up, we're on location at McDonald's on Tiffin Avenue for our annual Stuff the Bus School Supplies Drive. It's not uncommon for children to be anxious about heading back to school. We'll tell you how to make the transition smoother. For far too many children, new school supplies aren't enough to mask larger problems that can cause issues in class and beyond, but there is help. And once the bus is stuffed, then what? Tammy Stahl, a Christian Clearinghouse, explains how we get all of those school supplies into the hands of the kids who need them. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, July 26th, 2024. We're going to talk a lot about the Stuff the Bus School Supplies Drive and what it is and how it works and all of that. But before we get to all of that this morning, I want to start with the very first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. And this is making all kinds of national headlines. Ohio News that is making national headlines, and I'm not sure that it is necessarily in a good way. The Ohio Supreme Court has ruled against a man who claims he was injured after finding a bone in his boneless chicken wings. Have you heard about this story? It started in April of 2016 when Michael Berkheimer said that there was a bone in his boneless wings that he bought from a restaurant in Cincinnati or near Cincinnati. And he said because there was a bone that he accidentally swallowed, it, I guess, lacerated his throat, created an infection, and it has resulted in him not being able to work because it tore his throat. He's been off work, caused an infection, resulted in multiple surgeries. It even led to him being placed on multiple medically induced comas. Medically induced comas! So, of course, he sued because there was a bone in his boneless wings. After several courts ruled against him in his lawsuit, he took the case all the way to the Ohio Supreme Court, and now they have issued a ruling stating that bones are, in fact, a natural part of a chicken. I know, it's crazy, isn't it? The Supreme Court says consumers should be aware that even boneless wings might have a bone in them because chickens have bones. So, and they have ruled that consumers cannot sue if there is a bone in their chicken, even if it is advertised as boneless chicken wings. So, anyway, this is making huge headlines. Everybody talking about this around the country is making national headlines. And usually it's a good thing, you know, when Ohio makes the news and, you know, people are talking about things going on in Ohio. This is not necessarily what we would necessarily want to be known for, I guess. Here's another case. Here's another Ohio story that I saw on the Newswire. A woman in Portage County is now facing charges after she allegedly threatened her neighbor and fired shots at him as he was hunting on his own property. This was in Atwater Township. A man who was hunting on his own property says Luann Headley used a megaphone to yell at him that she would be a hunter's worst nightmare if he didn't stop, and then she fired shots in his direction. She has pleaded not guilty to charges of aggravated menacing and prevention of hunting by creating noise. I didn't even know that that was a crime, that there was actually a crime on the book, an ordinance on the books called prevention of hunting by creating noise. But apparently you can't do that, and she's now been charged. And also, speaking of Ohio stories, I thought this was kind of interesting. Out of Summit County yesterday, a cement truck turned over in a construction zone on I-77 northbound in Summit County near Richfield. No word on any injuries, but it closed the interstate for quite a few hours, I guess, because a cement truck overturned. First of all, how does a cement truck overturn? I mean, you'd have to really take a corner pretty fast in a cement truck to get it to overturn. But then, I mean, those things, you would think, be pretty heavy. I mean, given the truck and then the cement in the truck. I don't know how they ended up getting it right side up again, but it took several hours, I guess. A couple of other items among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories on this TGI Friday morning. If you are a traveler, you might be interested in this big news. Southwest Airlines has announced that they are doing away with open seating. If you have ever flown on Southwest Airlines, you know the boarding process. You get assigned a boarding group, and then you board the plane and you can pick any seat. It's open seating. Well, now they, and it's been that way for the entirety of the existence of Southwest Airlines, 50 plus years. Well, now they are doing away with that, and they're going to assign seating on Southwest Airlines. The airline says the move is a result of changing customer preferences. And that's not the only change. Starting next year, Southwest will begin offering premium seating for passengers who want more legroom, and they will introduce red-eye flights, overnight flights, for the first time. First of which will go from Las Vegas to Baltimore and Orlando, and from L.A. to Baltimore and Nashville, and from Phoenix to Baltimore. More overnight flights are expected to be added over time. So, overnight flights for Southwest Airlines for the first time. But the air carrier says that they insist they are not doing away with their free checked bag policy. So, I can deal with assigned seats. I don't mind that so much. And I actually like the idea of maybe upgrading to, you know, seats with more legroom, more comfortable seats, in a higher class of seats. But don't take away my free check bags. That would be a non-starter, I think. So, big news, though. I don't know when the assigned seating will start on Southwest, but it is in the works. Other items here, among the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to start your TGI Friday morning. The San Diego Zoo. So again, if you are traveling, if you go to the San Diego Zoo, it's one of those things you got to do if you're in the San Diego area. If you go to the San Diego Zoo, they are asking visitors not to show gorillas videos on cell phones. Do not show the gorillas your cell phone videos. And I've actually seen videos online on social media of visitors to the zoo showing gorillas the videos on the phones, and they are fascinated by them. Gorillas appear to be really interested in these in the cell phones, but it apparently has become a problem not only at the San Diego Zoo, but at other zoos around the country. The Wall Street Journal says people are getting gorillas addicted to watching videos on phones and iPads through the glass enclosures. And they say too much screen time, just like for humans, too much screen time alters their natural behavior. Just like with humans, which makes sense. We share 98% of our DNA. The zoo says they do not condone and strongly discourage playing videos for the gorillas. So don't do that. I've seen the videos online of people showing videos to the gorillas, and they're really fascinating, but it's not healthy for the gorillas, apparently. Don't do that. And lastly, here among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, and as the late Paul Harvey would be fond of saying, this day's news of most lasting significance may be this. A new, highly effective HIV drug could treat patients for just $40 a year. $40 a year. Early trials of the drug lenacapavir, I probably am pronouncing that wrong, but I think that's how you say it, lenacapavir. It is a vaccine-like drug that demonstrated 100% efficacy as a preventative treatment for HIV. It is a twice-a-year shot and would cost $20 each vaccination for a total of $40 per year. Why is this significant? because current treatments for HIV cost more than $40,000 a year in many countries, including the United States. You can trim that from $40,000 a year to just $40 a year. That is, and still, you know, be 100% effective. That is big, big news. This day's news of most lasting significance almost certainly will be that. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started here this morning. As we mentioned, today's show is sponsored by and made possible by the folks at Family Resource Center of Hancock County. And joining us is the site director for FRC of Hancock County, Sue Sorg. And Sue and I go back a long ways. I'm not gonna say how many years in a long way, but Sue, it is good to see you.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me, Chris. And yes, we do go back a long way.
So talk a little bit about the Family Resource Center. And we've talked with folks from the FRC many times on the program, but it strikes me that maybe this is something that, you know, people are not really familiar with in terms of the operations, what you do and who you serve and all of that.
So we are a nonprofit organization located here in Findlay, and we provide behavioral, mental health, and substance use disorder services for our community. We serve really all ages, youth through adolescent and adult. We are located out at 1941 Carlin Street, which is out past the airport. And we also still have our location on North Main Street at 2515. We do run some groups and occupational therapy services out of that building as well.
So you talk about the various services, and you were saying you serve really all ages, including kids, and that's going to be one of the things that we really talk about as the program goes on, some of the ways in which you help kids and some of the advice, things that we can, strategies we can use to get our kids ready for this change in their routine that's coming here with back to school right around the corner. What types of services for really, again, all ages do you provide? I mean, you mentioned like group therapy and things like that. Just give us an overview of the types of services.
Sure. So we have in-house counseling. We also have telehealth. We provide crisis services, which somebody from that team will be joining later to talk about those services. We have prevention, which somebody from that team will be here as well. We're trying to cover the whole scope today. And we are also very heavily involved in our schools. So with our youth, we are in Findlay City and all Hancock County local schools. So we have counselors, case managers, and prevention services that come to the schools pretty much every week to provide services for kiddos right where they are.
So these are individuals that come into the schools. They're not in the school like every single day, like on staff.
Correct. They are our staff that we have allocated throughout the week covering different schools. They're there for a half a day to a full day. Usually clients come in for their initial assessment at the Carlin Street location. Okay. And then they can be seen then in the schools by the counselors and the case managers. And again, prevention team will go in and run groups.
It's interesting that this is in the schools and I would imagine they have been, the schools have been more open to this in recent years. It's interesting that this has become more open and more accepted and, you know, the recognition of how beneficial this can be for kids to, like you said, kind of meet them where they are.
Absolutely. We've seen a huge increase, especially through COVID, of just the awareness that kids need mental health services. And so the schools are very welcoming to our staff. The collaboration and the partnering with them has been wonderful. Every year they want more. Unfortunately, we don't have more bodies.
That's a good problem to have.
It is a good problem to have. Yeah, they really, again, the collaboration and partnership with them has been great, and the Hancock County ESC have been wonderful to work with and really helping us get embedded to help.
It's really good to know that that resource is available for our kids. So how do kids get enrolled in these services? And again, when we're talking about everything from preventive care to crisis care, I mean, crisis care, I think we can all figure out how you get enrolled, you get referred to FRC or to the professionals for that. But with respect to, you know, the preventive care and that kind of thing, what's the process and how does that work?
So our prevention team is actually in the school and they do programming there. But if you want to get somebody enrolled in services, we have what we call open access. And we have that every day, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 9:30 to 11:30, and Tuesday and Thursday from 2:30 to 3:30. You do not need an appointment. You just show up. You fill out the paperwork. And we have counselors that have their schedules blocked to be able to do what we call a diagnostic assessment. They would meet with your kiddo, get them assessed, see what services they need, whether it's counseling, case management. We also have peer supports, and then decide where those services are going to be held, whether we can do that on site or in the schools.
So is this sort of a self-referral if a parent says, you know, I think maybe my kid is struggling and needs some additional help in this area, that they can pick up the phone or call? Or do you go to, like, the family physician who refers? I mean, what's that?
So we get referrals from everywhere, yes. We get a lot of self-referrals. We do also have an online process for the schools. Okay. So the schools can send referrals electronically to us now, and but primary care physicians, we kind of get referrals from everywhere and anywhere.
The reason I ask that is if a parent is hearing this and thinking, well, maybe my kid could use some help in this area, but I don't know. I mean, obviously, parents are not generally trained professionals in this area, so okay to pick up the phone and give a call and ask those questions?
Absolutely. We have a call center that is amazing. We have a lot of staff that's been at the call center for a long time. So they're very knowledgeable and can direct clients and families in the direction that they need. That phone number is 419-425-5050. Pick up the phone, or again, you can walk through our front door and we will assist you.
And you also are online, frcohio.org, and we've got that link on our webpage at goodmornings.net if folks are interested in learning more about what you do. And again, you are where? Located where?
1941 Carlin Street. It's out Lima Avenue past the airport. Carlin Street's right off Lima Avenue. And again, just come to our front door.
Very good. Again, Sue Sorg is the site director for the Family Resource Center, Hancock County, with us this morning, making our broadcast possible from McDonald's on Tiffin Avenue for our annual Stuff the Bus School Supplies Drive. And Sue, thanks very much for dropping by. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Chris. Thanks.
Once again, we are on location this morning at McDonald's on Tiffin Avenue for our Stuff the Bus School Supplies Drive. And as long as we're on the topic of back to school, I want to talk about preparing our kids beyond just getting them the school supplies they need, because this is a big change, whether your student is maybe entering school for the first time or heading to a new school, maybe going from elementary school to intermediate school to middle school, high school, whatever it might happen to be, or just the fact that getting back into the routine is sort of tough. It can be for many kids. Our show this morning is sponsored by the Family Resource Center of Hancock County, and joining us this morning from FRC is Lorena Munoz. She is a prevention educator there at the Family Resource Center. So, first of all, explain what a prevention educator does, Lorena.
So, the prevention educator, we focus on promoting the well-being through building protective and promotive factors for the individuals within our community. And one of the major ways that we do that is we develop social and emotional competencies with our youth in our school systems. And this actually reduces the rates of mental health substance abuse issues later in life.
So when you say developing social and emotional competencies with youth. What does that mean in layman's terms?
So it's building different skills to help our youth cope with big emotions as they get older. So we start in the daycares, preschools, and when we start at that young, they know how to express themselves. They know how to explain their emotions as they get older in hopes that they are able to cope with those big emotions later on in life and be able to express them in healthier ways.
Yeah. It's amazing. Again, it relates to something we were talking about with Sue a little bit earlier on the program, that we know so much more and the schools are so much more open to these types of mental health programs to help the kids, recognizing that this is what keeps them out of trouble later.
Yes, that's absolutely right. I mean, we're trying to normalize it, and that's why, you know, mental health has become so important nowadays, because we are normalizing that, you know, it's okay for boys to feel sad. It's okay for them to feel mad and then be able to express that healthier.
Yeah. It's okay to have those emotions, which is a really good message to talk about right about now as we're starting to think back to school, because for many kids, and I remember I was like this when I was young, my kids were like this when they were younger, and it's always a challenge to deal with. It was a challenge for me, a challenge for my parents, dealing with this anxiety of heading back to school. So how do we as parents start to help them with that transition?
So there are, as parents, we have to remember that transitions are hard. I mean, even for adults. So one of the things that we can promote their emotions is, like, maybe building, you know, skills at home, or continue building those skills at home, reading books. We, especially going back to school, like, starting routines early that aligns with the school schedule. And I know that's really hard because I have two little ones of my own. And it is, you know, I send them to bed early and it's like, well, exactly. It's still light out. So it's really important to start that schedule early on, so they, by the time school starts, it's good.
So it's not that abrupt change on day number one of school. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to do it. You can do it gradually. I mean, you know, maybe they go from not having a bedtime to the bedtime being 9:30 and then 9:15 and then 9 o'clock or whatever it might happen to be.
Exactly. So definitely do it gradually. Yeah. Because we want them to have that smooth transition. I mean, for some kids, it is, you know, they take transitions very smoothly, very easy. From children like my own, it's transitions for them are really hard, so I would need to gradually get them to bed on time and get that schedule started.
And then I would imagine, by extension, getting them to bed on time, getting them up when they will need to get up at the right time. And maybe would you say that would even include maybe building in that time for schoolwork in the routine when they would normally be doing their homework? Maybe at least getting them to read or do something that will be similar to what they will be doing once the school year starts?
Oh, yeah. So definitely, you know, even after school, you know, the time when they get home from after school is helping them decompress. Maybe building that time in, reading a book, coloring, you know, just something to get their brains going.
Yeah.
Another way you can prepare your kids to attend, or, you know, to help the transition, is try to attend all the open houses. This is most important, especially for preschoolers, kindergartners, because you want to familiarize that environment, the teachers, to them, making sure, you know, it's okay. This is a safe place. You've already been here. You know them. So trying to attend those open houses, meeting the teachers, and then setting clear expectations to the youngins, like, early on, just basically saying, you know, hey, you're going to have these emotions. It's okay. It's okay to feel anxious. It's okay to feel scared, worried. And then just making them feel like it's okay to leave you.
It's interesting, too. You mentioned getting the kids familiar with their teachers, with kind of the lay of the land in the building. And again, obviously very important for kids that are entering kindergarten or preschool who have never done this before. So it's all very new. But even as we mentioned, the transition into a new building, I mean, heck, I remember going into high school when I was that age, that there was a little apprehension, a little nervousness associated with that. So this doesn't go away just because the kids get a little bit older.
Exactly. I mean, picture yourself going to a new job or, you know, just entering a new place. Or for us as prevention educators, we do go into new schools. Or, you know, we are assigned different school systems or school districts. And so even for me as an adult, that's very nerve-wracking. Right. So just normalizing those feelings, it's definitely okay to be scared. And, you know, it's hard for adults, too, to send their little ones to kindergarten for the first time, too. I remember it was a very emotional time, but just normalizing it.
We have one of those in our family. Our granddaughter is going to kindergarten for the first time. And my daughter-in-law is actually, I think, struggling with it more than our new kindergartner is, because when she went in for the registration and, again, saw the lay of the land, you know, saw the classroom, met the teachers, and she was really happy because they have nice Play-Doh. She's got this down. Just to reemphasize something you were mentioning earlier, and I think this is worth repeating, it's okay to discuss these feelings and make sure that the kids know that they can talk with you about those feelings, and not just now, but also throughout the school year.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, so we did all the things. We sent them to school. We started them. We prepared them. So that's a lot of the questions that parents do ask is, how do we support them throughout the school year?
Right.
So we really want to emphasize the social connectiveness on, like, just being consistent on a daily basis, especially with our older kids. We want them to know that we are, you know, us as parents are connecting with them. We care about what they are going through. With older kids, they want to connect with their parents, but they also want to connect right at that age, you know, those teen years, they want to connect with their peers. So helping them maybe join a sport or an extracurricular activity to help them, connect with their with their peers as well, and, you know, making sure that their emotions are valid with us, because what they're going through as teenagers, you know, it could be at their age, like, breakups are a big deal. But, you know, the way they might look, the way they might feel, towards their peers, or, you know, whatever the case might be, to them that's a big deal, and we need to take that into consideration to make sure that it's completely valid. Let's work this out.
We are really guilty sometimes as parents as sort of dismissing those things, like the breakups or the disagreements between friends that seem like the end of the world. And obviously we've all been there. We know that that's not the case, but if we're dismissive, that's not helpful.
No, it's not. And I mean, we have to remember that because what is going on in their world is very big. And
it's their world.
It is their world. What do you think they're going to focus on? Are they going to focus on their schoolwork, or are they going to focus on what is going on right here? Yeah. We got to remember, as parents, we're so easy to help our adult friends out when something is happening. We put things down. You know, we are there. We need to be there again for our teenagers as well.
That is great advice. And it is really easy to see how that can spiral out of control. If they're focusing on all of those things, not focusing on their schoolwork, their grades go down, then that leads to other issues, and this can snowball really quickly. So a lot of great advice there for parents as we start to prepare our kids for back to school, and then ways that we can keep them headed in the right direction throughout the entire year. Again, Lorena Munoz is prevention educator with the Family Resource Center of Hancock County. And by the way, as we were mentioning a little bit earlier, if parents need a little help with this, you're always available, just a phone call away, right?
Absolutely. We are at Family Resource Center here at Hancock County.
We've got all of the details linked up on our webpage for more information on that. So you can head to goodmornings.net for information. And Lorena, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks to all of the folks who this morning have been driving up, donating school supplies, donating cash for our Stuff the Bus school supplies drive. The cash is great, too, because we'll use all of the monetary donations to sort of fill the gaps of what we are short on from the actual donations to get these school supplies in the hands of the kids who need them, the families that are struggling, as we know many families are these days, economy being what it is. So the Stuff the Bus drive continues here at McDonald's on Tiffin Avenue through the day today and into tomorrow. But the sad truth is that for far too many children, new school supplies are really not enough to mask larger problems that can cause issues both in the classroom and beyond. But there is help, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so glad that our broadcast this morning, our show, is sponsored by the Family Resource Center of Hancock County. We are joined by Tabby Adkins, who is the MRSS Team Crisis Counselor for the Family Resource Center. Okay, so let's start with that. What is MRSS?
Well, MRSS stands for Mobile Response and Stabilization Services. So it's through Hancock County, and it provides immediate on-site crisis intervention, de-escalation, support to the youth under the age of 21 and their families.
Okay. So when there is a youth in crisis, any age, this is like the first, I don't want to say first line of defense, but this is the first response then in many cases.
Yeah, so the goal of this is to, MRSS, the goal is to avoid, you know, sending kiddos to the hospital, like the emergency room, or avoid police interactions if we can. Okay. So if it is some sort of behavioral crisis, or it really, the MRSS is like a family-defined crisis, so it can be anything that they consider to be a crisis. Like I said, the goal, we want to kind of avoid any higher levels of care, and so if we can kind of come to the home, interact, problem solve, if you will, at the home, then that's what we like to do.
So, in other words, to put it bluntly, if there is a parent who has a child who is acting out and they're to the point where I just don't know what to do next, this is what you do next.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of times parents will call us to the home if kiddo's avoiding going to school. Sometimes when we get that call that it's just school avoidance, sometimes we find out it's something a little bit deeper than that, and we can kind of talk them through that and you know, problem solve on the spot, and maybe it's something where we can get the kiddo to go to school that day. And, you know, regardless, even after that initial, you know, crisis response, we can also do what's called stabilization. So that is 4 to 42 days after the crisis. Okay. And we can kind of do whatever it is we need to do to make it so this doesn't happen again. That's the goal. So a lot of it is like skill building, giving them access to resources. We do a safety plan at every initial appointment that we go to. And so this is kind of, the goal is just to make sure this doesn't happen again if we can.
So you used as an example, maybe a child doesn't want to go to school and is, you know, again, the parents are sort of exasperated. They've exhausted all of the tools in their toolbox and need to do something more. That would be an example, but that is relatively minor compared to some of the other types of behavioral interventions that you do.
Yes. Yeah, so sometimes, you know, we'll get that call that they don't want to go to school. We come to the home to kind of talk with them, you know, talk this through, and we find out it is something a little bit more, potentially, you know, suicidal ideations, or, you know, something's happening at school. Is there bullying? Is there any other sort of, you know, deeper concern? And so at every interaction, we have to do a suicide screener just to make sure that that is not something, you know, we're working with. And then, like I said, we do that safety plan, which kind of addresses whatever the issue is. So if it's suicidal ideations, we want to obviously safety plan that, as we would say. And then if it's school avoidance or something more, we kind of just take it as it comes.
So it's interesting. We jump right to the suicide iterations. That obviously is at the other end of the spectrum in terms of how serious an issue may be. But And you say every time you actually do a screening, and I guess that makes sense because, as we've seen, this is a crisis issue with kids and teens today.
Yeah, absolutely. And we just want to make sure we're covering all of our bases. And, you know, it can be something where it's just we need maybe a little bit better communication skills with parents. And, they don't feel comfortable saying, oh, well, I'm worried about this certain thing when I go to school. Or it can vary. It doesn't necessarily always have to be, that extreme, but sometimes it is.
But it's interesting you bring that up, too, because as Lorena was saying, this goes back to that point of when things go wrong at school or within their peer group, it may to us not seem like it's that big of a deal, that it's not the end of the world, but this is their world.
Yeah, absolutely. And, going to school, you're spending all day there with your peers. And if there's bullying happening or anything else, it definitely, it will end up kind of impacting the home as well. And so if we can kind of try to figure out what is that actually going on other than just not wanting to go to school because we're tired, right? Because sometimes that is it, but sometimes it's a little bit more. And absolutely.
How often does it happen that you get these calls, you have a response, and what you find out is it comes as a shock to the parents at just how deep-seated an issue it actually is?
Yeah, I would say most of the time we don't always get the full story right when we walk in the door. Mom or dad or whoever it is that's calling us at home, hey, I think this is going on. This is what I know. After, talking with the kiddo a little bit more, there is usually something else that's going on and something else that we need to address with them and with the parent.
Which goes back to what you were saying earlier, it's not just a single-time response. The crisis counselors then will follow up, and it could be a rather lengthy follow-up if necessary.
Yeah, so on our team, it's me, I'm the crisis counselor, and then we also have a case manager and a family peer support, just so we can kind of provide those different types of services as well. And sometimes I'll work with the kid, and then our family peer support, she will work with the family and kind of offer them that support. And it can be up to 42 days, but it doesn't have to be that full time. Like I said, the goal really is a family-defined crisis, a family-defined intervention. And so if we need to interact as many times as we can within those 42 days, we will.
It can literally be a lifesaver and certainly be figuratively a lifesaver for parents who are dealing with a crisis that they are maybe not equipped to handle. And as you mentioned, this is in many cases, or if not most cases, self-referral. I mean, it's the families who call up and say, hey, I need some intervention here, right?
Yeah, so definitely over the summer, most of our calls have been from parents or caregivers or, whoever is watching the child at that moment. But during school, we get calls from usually it's the principal or the counselor from school saying, hey, I've noticed this within the student. And then we try to also, if it's a school call, we try to also talk to the parents and say, hey, do you want us to follow up with you at home? Because a lot of times this stuff isn't happening in a vacuum. It's not going to happen in one place and probably not the other. Yeah, absolutely.
And if there are parents who are listening who are saying, this is something I may need to, put in my phone. I may have to utilize this service. That's what you're there for. How do they reach out?
So we have an MRSS call center number, and so you call that. A trained professional on that line will kind of gather all of the relevant information. They send it over to us, and then as soon as we get it, one of us reaches out to say, what's going on? Do you want us to respond to your home? Kind of where do we go from here?
Okay. And there is more information about the MRSS program on your website, right?
Correct.
We have that linked up at our webpage at goodmornings.net. Just, again, great information for parents to know, because ultimately the goal is to keep the kids safe and find ways to deal with whatever are causing these larger emotional or psychological issues so that they don't escalate to the, I guess, to put it bluntly, the point of no return.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we can kind of intervene with just some more simple coping skills, or, hey, this is kind of what's happening now, how can we stop it from getting to a more intense point later? That's kind of the goal, because we don't want to see kiddos in the hospital. We don't want to see them, you know, interacting with law enforcement if they don't need to, and kind of giving them those skills early on hopefully can, you know, set them up for a brighter future.
Absolutely. Tabby Adkins, again, is the MRSS Team Crisis Counselor for the Family Resource Center of Hancock County. Tabby, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
So this is big tourist season these days, people traveling and so on. If you happen to visit Death Valley, here is a helpful tip. Don't go walking around in your bare feet. You would think that would kind of go without saying, but a tourist from Belgium suffered serious burns on his feet while walking around Death Valley National Park over this past weekend. A 42-year-old, I don't know his name, reportedly lost his flip-flops in the sand dunes, and so he was left with no choice but to walk barefoot back to the ranger station. The park ranger in this news story said the skin was melted off his foot. The air was so hot that a helicopter was unable to fly into the area to medevac him to the local burn center, to the local hospital. So an ambulance had to rush him to a cooler location where then the helicopter could come and take him to the hospital. At the time, the air temperature was 123 degrees, and the ground temperature was estimated at 200 degrees.
Wow.
Melted the skin off his foot. Let that be a lesson. Don't go walking around barefoot in Death Valley.
Whew.
Don't have to tell me twice. Elsewhere in the broken news today, the odd and unusual side of the headlines, a gas station clerk in Tennessee has been arrested for allegedly attempting to steal $1 million from a customer. Well, kind of. He was attempting to steal a winning $1 million lottery ticket. Meet Patel is his name. Captured on camera, talking to a customer, looking, inspecting a ticket, then discarding it. The customer walks out, and then he fishes it out of the trash and puts it in his pocket. So what they figured out happened is that Mr. Patel told the customer that the ticket was a loser, threw the ticket away, the customer walks off, and then he tried to nab the prize for himself. However, the scheme was reportedly uncovered when the Tennessee Lottery Commission investigated. Mr. Patel has been arrested on charges of felony theft, and the customer was later contacted by authorities and told that his winning ticket was, in fact, a winning ticket, and a big winning ticket at that. Wow, that is... can you imagine? Oh, man. Thank goodness they were able to track down the customer. I mean, I'm assuming that they figured out who he was from surveillance video and were able to get the money to him that for his winning lottery ticket. Because would you like to find out later that the ticket that you trusted the clerk to verify was a winner and you would have no way of proving it? You know what I mean? That would be awful. Let's see here. Speaking of thieves... Here is a valuable tip. You've heard the expression, take the money and run. You should not take the money and brag about it on social media. It amazes me how many criminals actually brag about their exploits, their criminal exploits on social media. Four men are suspected of committing a string of armed robberies in the greater Los Angeles area. They are now under arrest after allegedly one of them posted a photo of himself holding the stolen cash on Instagram. 24-year-old Charles Christopher, 26-year-old D'Angelo Spencer, 25-year-old Jordan Leonard, and 22-year-old Tajjar Rouse were charged with one count each of conspiracy to interfere with commerce by robbery and one count of interference with commerce by robbery. The U.S. Attorney's Office says the suspects managed to grab a total of $7,617 from the business, I guess. It doesn't say where. It says a string of armed robberies. Businesses, I would say. A total of $7,600 was stolen. And it would seem that Mr. Leonard got a little too cocky and allegedly shared an Instagram photo of himself with a wad of cash captioned, "Love my bros, we go hit every time." And he tagged his partners in crime in the photo. He tagged his partners. This according to the indictment. So they're all in trouble. Sometimes the criminals just make it too easy. You know, sometimes they just make it too easy. Let's see here. And a couple of other items in the broken news. Again, another dumb criminal. I don't know. This seems like maybe it was overkill. The guy in Raleigh, North Carolina, who stole a car so that he could rob a vape store. You know, I mean, if you're going to go through the hassle of stealing a car, maybe aim a little bit higher, you think? Anyway, police there in Raleigh, North Carolina, are searching for the man caught on video crashing a stolen car into the store. The store owner says the driver caused about $7,000 worth of damage. No word on what all was stolen. And if you think that seems a long way to go just to break into a vape shop, keep in mind that he really didn't have to work all that hard to steal the vehicle. The owner of the car tells local news reporters that she had fallen asleep while her car was parked in the garage with the door open and the keys in the ignition. Make it a little too easy to steal the car. So maybe he figured, now that I've got the car, what do I do with it? Maybe that's when he snooze. Maybe it wasn't. He didn't steal the car with the idea of robbing the vape shop. That was an afterthought, perhaps. I don't know. Much that we have yet to learn about that story. And finally, in the broken news this morning, customs officials reportedly arrested the same airline passenger twice at the same airport in 1 week for carrying illicit drugs. Arrested twice in 1 week at the same airport with the same charge. U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials allege that a traveler from Europe entered Seattle with ketamine, codeine, and GHB. He was caught. Less than a week later, he was seized again at the same airport, trying to leave with more ketamine. The traveler has since been turned over to the Port of Seattle Police Department and faces charges of possession. Customs Border Patrol officers also utilize their unique border search authority to prevent persons from taking dangerous drugs out of the United States. So the first time they caught him, he was coming into the country. The second time, he was leaving, and he got nabbed again. Twice in 1 week in the same airport for the same charges. Nobody said that these guys were smart. That's why we have the broken news. That is your update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines this morning. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
It's the WFIN Virtual Car Show. Get them out, shine them up, and upload a pic of your classic, and we'll post it to WFIN.com for everybody to see. In addition, we'll have an online car show calendar so that you know when and where all the area shows are. It's chrome and horsepower on display online. The WFIN Virtual Car Show and Calendar. Thanks to Details Auto Spa, Lorette Chevrolet Cadillac, and 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. According to ratings in the Google Play Store, the most hated social media app in the world. And you know, it's social media. It's we all love to hate it. we use it. We use social media. Sometimes we can't help ourselves. We may try and break that habit, but we always seem to come back to it. the most hated social media app in the world is Facebook. Probably no big surprise there. But this I was surprised by. Facebook is not the most hated social media app in the United States. They looked at 39 different countries, including most of Central and South America, India, Italy, and Egypt is where they found Facebook is the most hated social media app. Reddit is the least popular, that's the online bulletin board, Reddit, the least popular app in 30 countries, including the United States. That's the one that we dislike the most, which is kind of interesting. I don't know how many people, a lot more people are on Facebook than Reddit, but that's the least popular, according to Google Play Store ratings in the United States. Let's see here. X, formerly known as Twitter, is the third most hated social app. Conversely, the most beloved social media apps globally are TikTok and Threads, which is the Facebook TikTok alternative. So those are the two with the highest ratings globally. In the U.S., the most loved social media platform today is something called Be Real. You know, one of the things that I think is really cool, and it happened just a moment ago, Mom brought her two daughters by with a bunch of school supplies to donate to put on the bus. And little girls, they're probably, what, second grade? Something like that. What a great way to teach your kids about giving to others. We are stuffing the bus at McDonald's on Tippin Avenue. Our annual school supplies drive for students and families in need continues through the day today. We'll be manning the bus until 7 p.m. today, and then tomorrow between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. So if you swing by McDonald's on Tiffin Avenue here and donate all manner of school supplies, I mean, we need pencils and crayons and markers and highlighters and colored pencils and pens and calculators and paper. We've got a lot of paper, notebooks, binders, and then even things like hand sanitizer and tissues and Ziploc bags and, you know, the hand wipes, and, you know, all of that stuff as well. Backpacks. Always need backpacks because every kid that gets school supplies will get a backpack as well. And so it always seems like we run short on backpacks, although we do have a good start on the backpacks here as well. So we mentioned all of those school supplies as examples of things that you can donate to the cause. Glue sticks, there's another one, and rulers, and yeah, all of those things. So anyway, we talk about all of the different school supplies that you can donate. Perhaps it would be easier for you to just donate monetarily. That is fine as well. You can donate cash or check, and we will use that money to fill in some of the gaps for all of the actual school supplies that are donated. We'll buy some more backpacks. We'll buy, you know, some of the things that we may be a little short on from the donations. So that is appreciated just as much as well. And if you want more information about the Stuff the Bus School Supplies Drive and how it works, what we're looking for, and all of that information, there is a special section of our website at WFIN.com to give all of that information. We also have that linked up at goodmornings.net. So we encourage you to participate, help out the families that really need a little extra help sending their kids back to class, covering that expense. But you may be asking yourself, once the bus is stuffed, then what? Tammy Stahl of Christian Clearinghouse was with us a little bit earlier this month ahead of our Stuff the Bus campaign to explain how we get all of these school supplies into the hands of the kids that need them.
last year we served over 1,300 children here in Hancock County. So that just tells you that the needs are many.
Yeah.
And we love this community because they are so supportive of us.
It is truly amazing every year to see how many school supplies are donated to the cause. Like you said, we helped 1,300 plus students last year. And it's also the monetary donations and all of that. So.
Right. And it's easy. If you can't make it out to the bus, you can drop things off in our office. We are working with Cedar Creek Church this year, which is taking over the Stonebridge Church location. So we're still going to have distribution at the same place. The other thing people ask is, what do you do with what's left over? And I'm like, what's left over? We never have anything left over. We're starting new every single year. And we just really, we get everything out to the schools if there are anything there things left. Mm-hmm. But we just love this community and the support they provide.
So it's all manner of school supplies that are needed.
Absolutely. Backpacks are always the biggest need because those are a little more expensive and they're harder to come up with.
Right.
But we need everything from pencils and papers and crayons to flash drives and things that maybe people wouldn't think of that you need for school.
Right.
But we need the scissors and the markers and just all that good stuff.
Right.
Pick it up or go on Amazon and have it sent to our office at the family center.
You could do that.
I mean, you can easily do that, and you don't even have to get out of your house. You can just hit some buttons on your phone.
You can do it all online. I was going to say you can just go up and down the aisles of the back to school section at the store and pick up one of everything because
everything
is on the list. Is needed,
absolutely. So. Yeah, we just need it all.
And then talk a little bit about how this, because this is a big undertaking. Once you get all of these supplies, what happens next? Kind of take us through this process.
Yeah, so we get the supplies, so then we have to pack up the backpack. So we have volunteers come out to the church, and we have a volunteer link on our website if you want to help with that. Just go on to the Christian Clearinghouse website at cchsupport.org. And then families do pre-register. Go on to our website and pre-register. And then we get those children taken care of. We can't promise you're going to get everything from Stuff the Bus.
Okay.
But we're going to give you the basic things to get started.
That
you may have to fill in.
Yeah.
Yes, that match that grade level. So we go ahead and take care of those first students. And then there's some people that didn't know about registration or they forgot to register.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be able to come to our office right before school starts and pick up backpacks. So we want to make sure that every kid has what they need when they go to school, because it's not fun to go to school and not have what everybody else have and not have new. We want new items. That's really important.
Right. So that's got to be just a tremendous undertaking to sort all of that out and, separate it by grade level and what's appropriate for each student. And
then
and
packing all those backpacks
all up.
And then people just drive through. So, again, it's a lot of hands. It's a lot of work. And volunteers are definitely needed and supplies are definitely needed. So however you can support us, whatever you can do, we really, really appreciate it. And the kids and the families really, really appreciate all we do.
Just to underscore how big of a deal this is, because I think on the surface, initially when people hear us talk about that, they think, well, I remember when my kids were in school, it wasn't that much money to send them back to school. I mean, you buy pencils, you buy crayons. I mean, how much does this really cost? But obviously, like everything else, prices are going up. And if you have, more than one kid, two or three kids are going back to school, that can be a big chunk of money.
It can be a big chunk of money. And, you're looking probably at $80 for the backpacks and supplies, not including school supplies, not including the shoes and the clothes and all those things that go along with kids going back to school in the fall. So we are trying to help. And, if you're out there kind of on the edge, should I register? Should I not register? We don't want going back to school to be a big financial strain on you. Mm-hmm. We want you to come in and get what this wonderful community supplies for you and get your kids the items that they need to make their school year start off with a bang.
Just making it a little bit easier on parents because, you still have to, shop for the clothes, the back to school clothes and get the haircuts and, all of that. But if we can take care of the school supplies, then at least we've got they've got a leg up.
Right. Absolutely. We take those proceeds and put them right back to the kiddos in this community. 100% goes right back to the kids.
I was just on the bus, and we've got a really good start to the Stuff the Bus School Supplies Drive. We'll be here at McDonald's on Tiffin Avenue until 7 o'clock this evening, and then tomorrow from 10 to 2. And then a very important point, as Tammy was just mentioning, if you or someone you know is in need of school supplies, make sure that you register. Again, you can go to goodmornings.net and find the link for more information. Stuffing the Bus. And once again, our thanks to the Family Resource Center of Hancock County for making our show possible from McDonald's on Tiffin Avenue today. And with that, we finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. And remember, once again, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday morning, back in the studio, and yes, the school supplies can add up and the clothes are expensive, but it is the technology that really gets you. We have strategies for managing those costs without breaking the bank from the experts at CNET Money. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out, make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.